Blog Talk Radio.
Radio 101. I'm your host, John Robb. Today's show, we are going to be joined by author Rebecca Jean Downey, and her book is called Devil Eye, out now. She is, of course, on tour with PartnersInCrimeTours.net. This is the tour stop for Suspense Radio for her, so we're pleased that we were able to have her on today. Of course, check out SuspenseRadioNetwork.com for everything that we have on all the shows. If you heard Friday, the Story Blender with Stephen James and Jose Castillo hosting on that one. Make sure that you go to the website. Tomorrow is Beyond the Cover, and we are going to have Nelson DeMille on, so Jeff and I are very excited about that. But now let's jump right in here to our guest. Again, like I said, her name is Rebecca Jean Downey. This is the second book in horror in her Perry Larkin paranormal thriller series. It is called Devil Eye. So, Rebecca, thanks so much for coming on. How you doing?
I'm doing great, John. I'm delighted to be with you today.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. We talked a little bit about the tour. You've had a great success. You've loved the experience. And that's all
I have.
So hopefully we'll be able to enhance that experience here on Suspense Radio. And
I've been looking forward to it all month, John.
Well, let's just jump right in now.
Okay.
Like you said, the book Devil Eye. It's the second now in your Penny Larkin paranormal thriller series. So give us the rundown on Devil Eye. What's going on?
Well, I don't know where your readers or your listeners come from exactly. I assume
all
across the United States, yes, in the world. But many times you don't receive the news that's going on along the U.S.-Mexico border. And I live right on the border. My office at the University of Texas, El Paso, looks right into the city of Juarez. And so I'm basically inspired to know more about what's going on in Mexico. And I think finally when a bullet hit our campus, I really began to think maybe I better start writing. And it ended up being that I started with thrillers. And Devil Eye is about gun trafficking. And we had a trial of four men that were arrested in line with the Brian Terry, the Border Patrol agent that was killed. We had a trial in Las Cruces, New Mexico, just up the road from us. And it got me to thinking, maybe I should write about that. And three of those people were actually officials with Columbus, New Mexico, the mayor, the police chief, and a village trustee, and they're now all in prison for gun trafficking. So that's kind of how Devil Eye got started, because I thought more people ought to know what was really going on.
Now, since this is the second book in the series, you know, Penny Larkin started off with the first one called The Middle Eye, and now you've come down into Devil Eye. But it sounds like that with the book Devil Eye, you were thinking and you had the plot. And then you got the plot and decided to kind of insert her in. How was the transition putting her into something that maybe the plot wasn't geared to who she was exactly, and maybe you had to kind of fit that around?
I think for Penny, she's a little bit of a duck out of water. First of all, she's blonde. And try to find blonde hair color in El Paso, Texas. It's tough. But there are mostly, we're 82% Hispanic. And so she is a bit of a duck out of water. She's been a struggling freelance writer. And all of that kind of shriveled up in 2006, 2007. And she decided, you know, I have a lot of this, you know, I can kind of see things. She doesn't like to think of herself as psychic. In fact, she doesn't like to be called psychic. But she takes a class in controlled remote viewing up in Alamogordo, New Mexico. And she gets hired then by the sheriff to find a child who's gone missing. The FBI thinks that the little girl, who's 11, and her name is Rosa, they think that she's a runaway because it's the second time she's actually been kidnapped. So the sheriff hires Penny to try to find this little girl, and that's how it all starts. And what happens then is that Penny discovers that child trafficking is quite common across our border, and she writes about it. So that's
And now for you living in an area where, now, you know, we're in Los Angeles, but, of course, San Diego and places like that are along the border. So we really don't see, of course, all of those things. But there's a lot of border cities. El Paso, of course, is a big one. Because of the crime that happens in Mexico right across from you. So when you're experiencing something like that and you're living in a city like El Paso, how does that help you in knowing it's about, you know, kind of what you're writing about and getting involved? Do you go across the border to understand? Do you talk to people that have come across? How does all of that research kind of muster now into a book?
Well, what happened in was that almost everyone here in El Paso, there's about 750,000, almost every one of us have been touched by the violence in Mexico. More than 70,000 people have been killed, 12,000 of those in Juarez alone. And so we've all been impacted by it, and it's just natural that you want to try to gain some healing from it. And that's kind of, I think, one of the reasons I started writing was to, as sort of therapy, to try to put my arms around why all this violence was happening. And I think that for that reason, I was trying to do sort of a service to some of my friends, too, to talk about it. El Paso itself is, believe it or not, the safest large city in the United States. We haven't quite figured that one out yet, but this is, you know, we have a kind of a dichotomy, a very safe city, and then just across the bridge, we have a more violent environment.
Yeah, and like I said, you hear a lot of the violence that goes on in Mexico and a lot of the things, a lot of the trafficking that kind of comes back and forth. Is it, when you go to other cities that don't really have to deal with that, you know, maybe it's in the Midwest, you know, away from the border and things like that, do you take a breath? Are you happy to get out of kind of in the zone that you're in? Or do you miss it? I mean, do you miss El Paso when you leave it? How does it personally kind of, you know, affect you being so close to all the stuff that's going on?
You know, that's a wonderful question. El Paso is sort of a hidden gem in the United States. It's, the people are amazing. The culture is rich and vibrant. And I do miss it when I go away. I really do, because it's just such a beautiful city and the people are wonderful. And so that, in that response, yes, I do miss it. And I have a very big compassion for the people of Mexico, and almost everybody who lives here is related to someone in Mexico. And so we're all unified in that regard. And we have, last year, a fellow journalist and I participated in a fundraiser for the victims of violence, the young children who lost brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers. They may have seen their parents killed, just to try to get them some education, some college money for scholarships and things like that, because the folks that are left behind are the ones, of course, that are suffering. And and so, yeah, so that's exactly, you know, I love the city, and it's a wonderful place to visit. It's safe. I don't want to lay that on the city, because it is a beautiful place.
Well, there is one thing on my bucket list, and I'm a sports guy, that I would love to see, because every time I watch it, the stadium for the Sun Bowl in El Paso has got to be one of the most gorgeous venues for football I think I've ever seen. It's like carved out of a mountain and was just laid right in there. That's one of the things I got to see. I love that.
It's beautiful. It overlooks Mexico. You can see right into Juarez, and it's beautiful. Usually the sun comes out at some point during the day, during the football game. There have been days when it hasn't, but for the most part, it is absolutely gorgeous, and the fans, people from all over the city come out for it, as well as the opposing teams. And I think it's the second oldest bowl game.
Pretty close.
It's
been around
a lot of fun.
I've been born in 1970. I've been watching football since I was 5-6 years old, and I always remember the Sun Bowl. And that's the one thing that always sticks out to me about El Paso. It's like, oh, yeah, the Sun Bowl. And I have family that lives in San Antonio and in Texas, but we never made it out to El Paso. I've been through Albuquerque, and I've been to New Mexico, and everything. But I've never made it into El Paso, and I think it might be the stigma of, you know, the things that kind of go on. And do you guys have to live that down? Do you guys have to, like, tell each other, look, it's not like that? You know, you can actually come here and it's fine.
It is. I mean, we do have to overcome that. And if it's any reassurance, we have every major federal law enforcement agency. In El Paso. You name it, they're there. Yeah, we have them all. And I think that the drug cartels know that. And we don't have crime against persons. No one is, there's not a crime against you in particular. They might want to steal your wallet, but they are not going to hurt you. I mean, that's the interesting and the phenomena of El Paso. Mm-hmm.
Well, what's funny is, they might want to steal your wallet because the feds are down there, and that's what the feds do every day, is steal our wallet. So it kind of makes sense. But now let's jump in. So you've been thinking a while, and, of course, you brought Penny Larkin out in the middle eye. And how much of her did you have to kind of build around? Were you thinking of her first when you started thinking about writing and the book, or was it the plot lines that came out and the middle eye came out of that? So was it kind of the chicken or before the egg that got you into this thriller business?
I think that part of it was I was thinking of her. As all of the listeners know, you probably read many, many mysteries and many thrillers. And sometimes you'll read where the protagonist, it's just a far stretch for them to be out solving crimes. You know, that's dangerous stuff. And so I kept thinking, what kind of protagonist could I have that would actually have a legitimate reason for being out and risking their life? And so that's kind of how it started. And then I have been involved in law enforcement writing for many years, and I met the sheriff of El Paso County. He has since died, and I had done a story for a magazine, and he let me tour both of the jails, and I got to see a lot of the issues. He talked to me about the issues of trying to enforce law along the border, and so he is, by another name, he is in both of my books. In fact, he's in the third one as well. So, I mean, he's one of the big characters.
So this is definitely a series that is ongoing. Like you said, you just have book three coming that you're probably working on now. So there's no end in sight. You're just going to keep writing, you know, Penny, as long as you can handle it or the fans do handle it, right?
Well, I've asked the fans. That was one of the things I did send an email newsletter around to get their feedback, because I've read many series, and there comes a time when there's not anything, I think, that important to write about in a series, and it becomes kind of rote, and I don't want that for Penny. And so the fans have kind of thought that maybe she could handle five books, and so I've kind of got that aim in mind. So that's where I am at this point. Because it means, I'll tell you what I mean, because she has a love life, you know, so I have to decide who she's going to wind up with.
So let's just say that you stick with five and you decide, okay, this is the path I'm going to take. Are you cautiously thinking about, okay, now in book three, which basically is just past the halfway point, when you're finished with that, do you, or when you're writing it, do you think that, first of all, 5 is probably either going to be the right number, or do you think that you won't be able to finish the story and you're going to have to go on forward? And
I don't know.
Instead of trying to fit it into 5.
I think that the readers will tell me. They're very vocal. Readers are very interesting. They tell you what they like and what they don't like.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They've all weighed in.
Shy,
they've all
they?
Weighed in.
Yeah,
they've all weighed in on what she's doing, and some prefer the middle eye more than the devil eye. Some love the devil eye more. I mean, it's really fascinating to me, and I love it. And I feel like I have, readers that takes their time to invest in a book and read the book, and so I want to do my best and do something that they feel it was worth their time and money.
Now, what authors did you read kind of growing up that inspired you or got you to think, you know what, I can do this. This is kind of where I want to go. Is there one or two, particular authors that got you geared up and fired up to want to write?
Well, I've been writing since I can remember, but Ernest Hemingway, I would say, probably in junior high and high school, I started reading his work. And really, when I was traveling in Europe, actually went to a couple of the places he used to hang out, some of the bars, just to kind of see if I could pick up some of the, DNA of the environment, because he was just so majestic in his words. And he would be probably, and then Jane Austen. I read a lot of classics. I read a lot of that. And then when I got into the mysteries, I loved Janet Ivanovich, and then I Lisa Scottolini is like one of my favorites. And
have you met her?
I'm now. No, I would love to.
She's great. We love Lisa. She's a friend of ours, and she's wonderful. Yeah, she's wonderful.
I love her work, and I loved Pigeon Tony in The Vendetta. I mean, I just mm-hmm. love the culture of the Italian world. It was so fascinating to me, and so she was a great influence on me. And now I'm picking up. I'm reading Lee Child and some of the others.
Okay.
That I'm trying. It's very hard to read and write at the same time. I might add.
It is. Oh yeah. That is something that that is very difficult to do, is reading and writing, because you don't want to. Because you're sitting here, reading a book, and you're like reading for 2 hours. And you're like, God, I could have been writing for 2 hours instead of reading for 2 hours. But sometimes it's good to get away, and you maybe get a little different perspective. And I think that when you read other authors, because if you don't read, then you can't write. And by reading, you might sit there and say, wow, like let's just take Lee Child, like an action scene, that was really well thought out and written. That's something that maybe I should think about incorporating, kind of how he did it. So I think that you do get a lot of research, even though it is entertainment, and that's cool too.
Exactly. And I think that for an author, that is the biggest challenge, is that when you're reading, you think you should be writing, and when you're writing, you think you should be reading. And and then there's family time, and then there's your, your day job, so to speak.
Yeah, I think we all have day jobs. I mean, I have a day job, too. We all seem to have day jobs.
I'm a writer at my day job, so.
Right. Yeah. So now let's kind of talk about the journey, like before the middle eye, when you just finished it and you were trying to get it out there. How was that journey for you, finally being able to get published? Did you get agent first? Did you, how did you kind of work it out for your, for yourself to get it going?
Well, what I did was I kept querying agents, and they weren't really very interested about the border. And a lot of times they would say, well, this doesn't really excite me. And yet here I was thinking, gee, this is so tremendously important and so exciting. But they weren't excited, and so I started querying publishers. And that's how I got – I went right to a publisher. And
good,
it took
you
several months. I heard from a public, it took them maybe 3 or 4 months, and I got back with them. And I was really pleased. I've been pleased with them. I've had some interest from Penguin, but you hate to change in the middle of the stream. So mm-hmm. I'm yeah, that's kind of where I am right now. I'm just really happy with where I am.
That's great. And see, everybody's kind of journey is different, and I always try to let authors know, because they're like, well, what did you do? What did you do? And it's like, there's really no perfect formula, because if there is, then everybody would follow it. It's just kind of,
right.
you just got to be persistent, and you just got to write the best book that you can, and it'll be recognized. If you do the work, someone will
right.
find you. Someone will find
well,
you.
Well, yeah, Cindy, are you familiar with Cindy Dees? She's a writer who I got some advice from her, and she was saying that she's been traditionally published for years, but she's also doing some of her own self-publishing and sort of a mix. And I'm thinking that what I'm going to be doing is maybe some short novelettes or something that are digital to kind of go along with this particular series, and just to, you know, put them on Amazon and Barnes and Noble that way.
Yeah, I don't know who that is, but I mean, I think that the platform that you can do now, I think, is wonderful.
Yes, and I really think that authors should consider it. You know,
uh-huh.
kind of stretch their venue a little bit.
Now let's look at the two books in a whole, and let's look at like the secondary characters. Is there one that kind of stands out to you? Maybe came on in the middle eye, or maybe just came on here in the book Devil Eye, that maybe had a bigger role than you thought they were going to have, and somebody that
yes.
is maybe surprising to you that's moving forward. You're like, I didn't know I was going to keep writing with them.
Well, the interesting thing was with the middle eye, authors fall in love with some of their characters, and I don't mean it in a romantic way, but I did have a character that I just absolutely fell in love with, and he was a doctor. His name was John Marquez, and he was a doctor in Juarez. And I don't know if anybody knows, but the drug cartels kill doctors in Mexico, particularly those that are treating drug addictions. And
They kill the doctors?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there was, I think, when I was writing the middle eye, they'd killed maybe seven. They just shot them down in the street. And so
they want to keep the drug addiction going.
That's correct.
They don't want people cured. Wow, that's
yeah.
one way to protect your, I guess, to protect your customers.
Exactly.
Kill the people that are helping you. Oh, I've never heard of that. That is
well,
amazing.
One thing that people may not know is in Mexico, it's legal to have small amounts of cocaine, marijuana, methamphetamines, heroin on your person. It is not against the law. And so, you know, things run a little bit fast and loose, and doctors that do try to overcome these, you know, they're really shunned. And so this particular doctor was, I really liked him. And one of the things that is the subject of the middle eye is finding yourself in a space where you do something that's against your moral or ethical system, your values.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
what does it take to save yourself or to save your family? And that was the choice that John Marquez, he decides to get into child trafficking to earn enough money to take his family out of Mexico.
So that's the guy that was more... that you want to explore further? Is that kind of going forward? You're like, I had no idea.
Yeah, he's not in any of my other books. I can't say why, but that would spoil.
We'll have to read it to find out.
Yes, but I loved him, and you know, it's just it's what happens. And then in the second book, Devil Eye. Penny meets, of course, she's dating, by the second book, she's dating Leo Tejas, the sheriff of El Paso
mm-hmm.
County. But she meets Johnny Trejo, who's captain of the New Mexico State Troopers, and where she's stranded on the interstate during a dust storm. And so he's kind of introducing he and the interesting thing was is that the readers have fallen in love with Johnny's mother. How would I know that, you know? But they
right.
love her. Yeah. So I have to bring them back in. You know, when the reader tells you, oh, you know, I loved her, please leave her in, kind of thing. So the readers are very, very important to authors.
Yeah, because you never want to kind of have, I guess, a storyline that you maybe started and then you didn't finish, because then
right.
they're like, well, whatever happened to those two people? And you're like, I
right.
don't know.
Well, exactly. And have you ever read Elizabeth George? I read all of her novels. She writes
out
of
England. Personally, but we do review a lot of her stuff. Yeah, we know her.
But, you know, well, she killed off one of her main characters, Helen. I refuse to read her anymore. Because, okay, I was so mad. I mean,
but you know what? But, you know, and whether or not you read, and when you said, I'm not going to read her anymore, she still did her job. Because
she made
you become emotional about a character, which is a lot better than being forgetful about a character.
Oh,
and
no, I know.
Often never wants to write
I
a character
understand.
That's forgotten. Yeah, that's
I
great.
Think she,
I think she
had to write another novel explaining why she killed her off. I mean, because
did you email her and tell her that? You should email
no,
her and tell
I
her
haven't.
That.
I want to get back with her because she is a wonderful writer. But, you know, I thought, I'm just going to take some time off because I had to get over grieving over losing Helen, you know. I mean, it was tough.
Too funny.
Because these characters are all people.
Well, we got about a minute left, and what I want to do is give you the last word to be able to let people know where they can find you, social media, maybe things that you got coming up, and, of course, what they can expect from you in the future. So I will leave that up to you now.
Well, thank you. Thanks, John, so much for having me on today. I loved it. My next book will be out sometime the end of 2015 called Unbridled Eye. It's the third in the series of Penny Larkin thrillers set along the U.S.-Mexico border. This time I'm getting ready to expose a great big scandal that's going on in America's horse racing track, so stay tuned.
So, and again, everybody, we want to thank Rebecca for coming on today. Rebecca, it has been fabulous to talk with you. Can't wait to see what you got going in the future. Good luck. I don't know if the tour is over for you now or if you still have
it
another month to go.
It is. Today is the last day, and I really had a blast.
So
I love it.
So we finale too. That was good. So I'm glad we were the finale.
Great. Well, thank you so much, and thanks to all of your listeners. I appreciate being on.
All right. Thanks so much. You enjoy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So again, everybody, that is author Rebecca Jean Downey. Go to Rebecca Jean Downey. JeanDowney.com for more information, of course, on the book Devil Eye, which is the latest, and go back and check out The Middle Eye. It's a Penny Larkin paranormal thriller set down in El Paso, Texas, on the border, so you're going to get a lot of different flair, a lot of different, you know, characters and things that are going on from someone that, you know, lives there. Her office sees it every day. You can't get that much more into it than someone who's there all the time. That's what we love to see, is that kind of, you know, personal touch that goes on in those books. So, again, we want to thank you all for listening. It's been great to be able to talk with you all. Remember, SuspenseRadioNetwork.com is the place to go. You can go to SuspenseMagazine.com. If you want the magazine, just email us, editor@SuspenseMagazine.com. We'll get it out to you, and whatever else you want to do. Again, until next time, we will see you all tomorrow. On Beyond the Cover, again, that is going to be with Nelson DeMille. Jeff and I are very excited about that. So join us for that. Go back and listen to all the shows. Until next time, keep reading.